We are very lucky today to host Dr. Michael Maffei, one of the top clinician scientists in the world. Dr. Maffei is professor of medicine and anesthesiology at the University of California, San Francisco, and member of the very famous Cardiovascular Research Institute. Michael's name is synonymous with progress in ARDS. Michael, you have served as associate editor for Physiological Reviews for 9 years and as editor-in-chief of AJP Lung for 6 years.
It's a great pleasure, and I think it's you, Sadi, who has given so much time and service to Physiologic Reviews and many other APS activities outside of all of your outstanding research. So I appreciate the opportunity.
Thank you, Michael. Your previous mentor, Dr. Staub, wrote an authoritative review on pulmonary edema in Physiological Reviews, and that turned me on in the field. You authored the authoritative review on active ion transport and the resolution of pulmonary edema in Physiological Reviews. This article has been downloaded 2,306 times. It has received 541 citations, and 9% of the citations have been received in the last 2 years. That shows the longevity of this article. In addition, it has a dimension score of 541, one of the highest ever published in PRV. Michael, can you briefly discuss your seminal experiments that established the importance of active sodium transport in the resolution of pulmonary edema and the clinical implications of this finding?
Well, thanks, Sadi. Briefly, our initial observations derived from studies in intact animals, specifically sheep, in which we found that fluid that we instilled into the distal air spaces of the lung, actually with a fiber optic bronchoscope, initially an anesthetized sheep, was rapidly reabsorbed. But the main surprising finding was that the protein concentration of the instilled fluid, which was usually autologous plasma or serum, or sometimes 5% albumin, progressively increased to pretty high levels, well above plasma protein levels. And that suggested that there might be an active ion transport process driving the reabsorption of the fluid. So to make a long story short, we continued with those studies and were able to inhibit that fluid absorption with amiloride, an apical sodium transport blocker. And from that, we went on to evaluate the same kind of fluid clearance mechanism in smaller animals, such as rabbits and rats, and eventually in mice. And of course, we were greatly helped in this area by work that you, Sadi, were doing in a variety of in vivo and in vitro settings, studying sodium transport in isolated type 2 cells. So it then became an important area, I think, for the whole field to realize that the epithelial barrier was critical, not just as a barrier to alveolar flooding and as a source of surfactant, but actually as a way to keep the air spaces dry or to hasten the resolution of alveolar edema.
Well, thank you, Michael. And can you briefly discuss the implications in humans? Because you have done some seminal experiments in humans with ARDS. How does active transport make a difference in the resolution of ARDS?
Well, that's a really excellent question because it leads to the next step in our research, which was somewhat in parallel to the laboratory studies, in which we obtained, after a patient was intubated and ventilated for pulmonary edema, whatever the cause, heart failure or lung injury, we obtained an initial undiluted edema fluid sample. We measured the protein concentration. And then we obtained a second sample approximately 4 hours later. And what we found is that some patients, for example, with heart failure, had a steady rise in the alveolar protein concentration as they were being treated for their heart failure with diuretics or afterload reducers or treatments that would improve the left ventricular function. And so their chest x-ray was beginning to improve, their oxygenation was improving, and we found the same pattern as in the animals. The alveolar protein concentration went up. Now, in contrast, most patients with ARDS, when we obtained the second edema fluid sample, it was the same as the first. suggesting there had not, in the short term, been net reabsorption. There were a few patients, 10 to 20% of ARDS patients, who could reabsorb some of the fluid. But the ones who could not, they had a much worse clinical course, suggesting that there was an injury to the epithelial barrier that prevented reabsorption. And then the final part of this that was helpful is we have begun to start studies with the ex vivo human lungs, which we received in the lab from the California Transplant Donor Network. So lungs that were not transplanted, often because of the size of the lung not being right or other factors. When we put a warm 37-degree solution into the lungs, we found that the fluid clearance occurred just like in the animal models. And in fact, as you, Sadi, and others had published, when we gave beta agonists and increased cyclic AMP, the fluid rate of clearance increased by 100%. And this was really remarkable. And then subsequently, to make a long story short, we now have a perfused human lung system. And we know that the human lung can reabsorb 20% of the alveolar fluid if it's normal every hour, and up to 40% if stimulated with a cyclic AMP agonist. So that's sort of the translation to the clinical setting.
Well, Michael, thank you. This is a clear example of the bed to the bedside. And I think this is a seminal contribution to the field. And a lot of us have used your techniques to study ion transport. Michael, you have been in the forefront in the fight against COVID. In April of 2020, you published a highly authoritative review in Physiological Reviews proposing that elevated plasmin and plasminogen are important risk factors that contribute to higher mortality and morbidity in patients infected with COVID. This article has been downloaded 33,000 times and has received 172 citations in 1 year. Would you be so kind to discuss your experience in taking care of patients with COVID and how bench discoveries have been translated or so promise of being translated into better medical care for these patients? What do you think the future holds for COVID?
I think that's a really a terrific question and perspective. My thoughts would be as follows. Of course, like with any disease, the best approach is to prevent it. And so the success of vaccines is pretty evident right now. We all worry about having a strain or a new kind of SARS-CoV-2 that could be resistant to the current vaccines. So I think efforts to improved treatment for COVID-19 are very important. And your reference to that article we published in Physiologic Reviews brings up the important role that it seems to be somewhat unique in COVID-19 ARDS, namely a very prothrombotic tendency. Now, we know in regular classical ARDS, there's some element of thrombotic injury in the lungs, but it's quite clear that in ARDS from COVID-19, more patients have a hypercoagulable response. And whether this is from impaired fibrinolysis or prothrombotic factors is hard to sort out. But there is one result, which I think will be published in the New England Journal in the next few weeks, which we at UCSF were part of, but many hospitals were around the country and some in Canada, which learned from this trial that patients who had COVID-19 who were on the floor, sick with needing oxygen, but not yet in the ICU, they had a major benefit from receiving full dose anticoagulation versus just prophylaxis. Unexpectedly, the patients in the ICU did not benefit, as if perhaps the horse was out of the barn and there was too much thrombosis and procoagulant activity. But this at least gives the suggestion that this procoagulant tendency in COVID-19 could be attenuated with full-dose anticoagulation if it were given in patients before they come to the ICU. Currently, there's more trials ongoing with the platelet inhibitors and other efforts. And I think to this day, Sadi, we don't understand enough yet about all the mechanisms. Like, is the COVID-19, for example, causing endothelial injury, which then prompts this procoagulant activity. For example, the patients don't look like patients with disseminated intravascular coagulation with a drop in their platelet count. So there are differences here that we don't yet understand. But this one finding, I think, gives some hint of at least a therapeutic response. And this seems to be more of a tendency, for example, than was the case in influenza pneumonia and ARDS. Something about SARS-CoV-2 does provoke a more prothrombotic tendency.
This is great, Michael, and thank you so much for taking care of these very sick patients at great personal risk to you. Michael, in closing, what advice do you have for early stage lung biologists and pulmonary physicians who are interested in pursuing careers in pulmonary research? What are the most important challenges facing them? What does the future hold for them?
I think that's a really key theme that you and I share a major interest in. I would say that COVID-19 and the response of the healthcare system and the scientists on many levels has galvanized and raised interest among many students and fellows in all domains, MDs, PhDs, and so on, and seeing how exciting it is to be involved in research that can help advance and improve care, whether it's for COVID-19 or other problems, cancer conditions or whatever. So I would say that for young investigators, they should keep their focus on the basic idea that academic medicine or academic work involves the opportunity to learn more. My brother, Richard, said to him, Richard, why should someone stay in academic medicine? He said, oh, it's easy, Michael. It's the love of learning. He said they can enter in at any level, basic lab work, clinical research, clinical trials. But I think that the rate at which we've learned a lot about COVID-19, though still so much yet to learn, is a good example of that, Sadi.
Thank you so much for finding the time to do this. I also personally would like to thank you for being such a great friend, collaborator, and mentor to me. Your enthusiasm, optimism, and love of science are truly infectious. And a lot of us comment that they feel uplifted after talking with you. Sure, you will continue to make great contributions to the field.